And for the Positive Mind with Armand Mill.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with Roberta Atti, The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial, New York City. Bringing you things to think about. We've been talking about some research that Roberta and I have been working on. We've been talking about some of the effects of abandonment. It's been part of our research on the repercussions of being displaced, separated, neglected, and lost as part of what we've called the refugee syndrome. You know, if you think of that, the refugee syndrome is happening all over the world, of course. A person is suddenly displaced. They're left from their homes. They cannot go back to their homes. What happens? It's happening everywhere in the Middle East. It's happening in Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, everywhere. All over Israel and Palestine. What happens when you're separated from your home, your family? What happened to many people during the Second World War in Europe, where that was such something that happened all the time? People became what they called refugees, and the refugees, including the people that came to America, were the people who were without a home. They had a certain kind of common look about them. Well, we've been talking about some of the amazing things that go on physiologically with people who are misplaced. But then we've noticed that this refugee syndrome appears in many people, more people, than people who are physically dislocated, but people who are emotionally detached for some reason or other from their homes or their families. And we're going to continue that discussion today with what happens when someone is disconnected from specifically their mothers. An important part of a refugee syndrome would be, you know, you lose your mom, no matter how old you are, because most people, if they're separated, they're kind of alone. Most people's mothers are either too old to go with them or live in a separate place, and so whenever it happens, you're separated. But you could lose your mom in many ways. Today we're going to talk about that.
Armand, I think that what I would like to point out to people is that the way we've been looking at this is different, slightly different from the usual, because normally we take into account the effects of abandonment and separation mostly from the perspective of what it does psychologically. But what we've been discussing are the effects on the body, which you did say, physiological effects, the kidneys, the brain, the adrenals, the heart, how does...
And the hormones.
How does separation, physical or emotional, affect the organs of the body? That's the perspective that we've been looking at.
And we find that that collaborates with what we've been observing about the emotional makeup of people who are separated in one form or another from their homes, and especially now we're going to focus on the people who are separated from their mothers, and many people are. You know, many adults, many of you, in fact, most of you, have been separated from your mothers.
It's enough to look at the nursery in a maternity ward of a hospital to find many of the refugee syndrome symptoms in the babies that are lying in the bassinets by themselves, separated from their mothers right from the start.
So here we go, here on Bastille Day.
Uh-oh.
Don't use your hands.
Off with their heads, says the Queen.
On Bastille Day, we're going to take a look at some of the vital elements of this, because it's hard to believe how this impacts on you, but it does. It appears in everyday life. We want to look at the effects of separating from your mother in one form or another, not by your choice. And this could happen to you anywhere in your life. We're going to focus on what happens before the age of 20. Now, what happens in the first few years of your life? What happens when you're born, in fact? Anything that disrupts the bond of mother and child is likely to trigger the refugee syndrome. And what could separate, what could create the bond? It could be your mother's own mind. It could be your mother's losing her mind in one form or getting depressed. She could leave, but not leave physically. She could suddenly have to go to work, you know, to support a family as a single parent. Whatever it is, we are saying that there is an effect on the child, and you'll be able to identify this effect in you if you have been separated from your mom in your earlier years. Let's just start at the very, very beginning. This is so fascinating, Roberta. What happens nowadays? What are one of the early signs of that forced separation with children? And I'm thinking specifically of what happens, the way childbirth happens.
Sure, Armand. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that one of the physical manifestations of suffering from this syndrome is the metabolism is different in the body of a person who is separated from his or her mother. And this happens, can happen right at birth, right for the baby in the first moments of life, because here we are in a regular hospital. I'm not now describing the fancy birthing rooms that are now, thank God, being implemented and promoted and used. I'm talking about regular hospital birth, which is still the fate of most mothers, is to go and give birth in a place like this. You give birth, and often this is labor is induced, meaning that the woman is given Pitocin, which is a synthetic homologue of oxytocin, and that's a hormone that the woman normally would produce.
Okay, now just slow that down just a second. Normal childbirth, person's out in the field, she has a baby. She's at home, she has her baby. Now we have hospitals. Hospitals are now saying we're not going to, because of the convenience of wanting a baby to be born at a specific day, right, or a specific hour, and why would they have these specific days and specific hours that we want a child to be born as opposed to saying, well, when the kid comes, the kid comes?
Well, it's convenient to, for instance, if you want to work with one specific doctor, with one specific OBGYN, and that doctor goes on vacation next week, well, let's induce the labor before he or she goes on vacation.
Yes, now this
so
is
that
common.
That doctor can be there.
When there might be a hospital bed available is
exactly.
A good time, when there's a surgical room available.
Exactly.
So we will induce the childbirth, and of course, what difference is it? The child is going to be born. But in order to induce the labor, you get injected with this synthetic Pitocin, which is a synthetic form of oxytocin. Mm. And oxytocin is the stuff that creates the spasms that has the child be born, right?
Correct. It's the one hormone that causes the contractions of the uterus. And normally the pituitary, I believe, secretes it. And it secretes it when the body of the woman and the body of the baby are in tune and something magical happens between the two of them, where both of them, on a chemical level at least, agreed this is the time. And so the hormone can be secreted at normal rhythm, and the woman goes into labor, and usually when this happens naturally, the labor should be rather, non-traumatic. Now, let's look at the Pitocin, the synthetic version, and the induced labor. This is much more traumatic because the contractions brought about by Pitocin are more intense and more brutal than those that are natural. So the woman already goes immediately, in 2 minutes, let's say, goes into severe contractions, very painful, and her body has not had the time to adjust with all of the other neurotransmitters that would be secreted as labor progresses, she's not there yet, and yet the contractions are so intense that she's already in a lot of pain. So often she will ask for a painkiller or an epidural.
Before we get to that, now mind you, the baby doesn't have a choice here. The baby's now out of rhythm with mom.
Correct.
Right? Now you're out of rhythm. So you've got your first separation from your mother takes place when they induce labor.
Yes.
Everything is working to keep everything going in harmony. Your heartbeats match. Everything kind of matches. Everything is going along until they say, hey, the doctor's going to be, he wants to get out of here before 5 o'clock so he could go golf. So induce that labor.
Right.
Now you induce it, and you and your child are now separated.
Yes, because also the mother now is in a lot of pain, and she cannot fully consider the well-being of the child when she's in a lot of pain like that. So often she will request medication or to do something to be able to tolerate the pain, whereas natural labor is much less difficult for a woman to tolerate, because as she gets to the intense contractions, her body has a chance to adjust, and also the body of the baby has a chance to turn, to breathe, to do whatever the baby needs to do to get in harmony with the mother. This does not happen, so there's an immediate separation between mother and child right there and then.
Mother is now under great stress.
Yes.
She's under stress. Cortisol is getting secreted, right? She's going to be putting out a lot of the stress hormone. She's in pain. They give her dope.
Yes, there's now not enough endorphin.
Now we give her the kind of endorphins, endorphin-like stuff.
Well, usually Demerol.
Demerol, right? Give her more endorphin. Now she's stoned.
And the baby, don't forget, Armand, that when a woman takes Demerol during labor, we're talking about morphine, an opiate. So the baby's breathing, for instance, can slow down significantly. So now you put an ultrasound monitor on the belly of the mother, and now the baby looks like he or she's in distress because the breathing rate has gone down. Okay. For instance, that's one of the things that can happen.
So right away we got to get that baby out of there.
Yes.
And we force this birth to happen. And you, my friends, most of you in the 40s or 50s may have been born this way. Induced labor.
Yes.
And it is little wonder that when you come out, there's an odd kind of disconnection that the mother has with the baby and the baby has with the mother, but it continues. It continues right into, by the way, if you just tuned in, we're talking about motherless children. We're talking about children who lose their mothers in one form or another to one or another thing, which could be depression, illness, death, and what the effect is on the children. Another thing that happens is right after birth, right? This whole thing about lactation. What do they do in most hospitals when a child is born? Do they give the mother and say, "Here, feed your baby"?
No. They usually hardly let you look at the baby. They generally take the baby away and tell you that now they're going to be doing certain things that are required immediately to make sure the baby's okay. So they're going to take it to be weighed and measured, and all the vital signs are going to be checked. But they hardly give you a chance to see this baby. So now when a baby is born naturally, the first moment the baby is born and the mother and baby have had a natural labor, there's an immediate bonding that happens, which is a behavioral event caused by chemicals secreted in the nervous system of both mother and child. And those are the chemicals that foster this bonding, which is the strongest bond a human being will ever experience. Now, but when they remove the baby from the mother at birth, let alone that the mother doesn't have a chance to even recognize that this is her own baby. So sometimes a mother even doubts that she went home with the right baby. I mean, I've heard mothers say, you know, I've never been sure that this is really my child because they took him away when he was born. But so she doesn't have a chance, for instance, to smell the baby. And so the smell of the baby is very important because it gets imprinted in the mother's brain and it determines a lot of her behavior towards that baby. But also the baby is taken away, for instance, and immediately is given an injection of vitamin K, drops in the eyes, and then often a bottle of sugared water, glucose water, and sometimes even formula. And this is done often without letting the mother know, so that the breastfeeding process, which is one of the most important processes in order to develop the bond and maintain it, is disrupted so early on that sometimes it never resumes. Also, colostrum, which is the first milk that comes out of the breast, contains elements that are extremely important for the baby's immune system, for instance, and that's missing.
So a child is born, they scoop the baby away, and the drug companies say, give the kid formula. Because as soon as we give the kid formula, the kid's not going to want breast milk because we've got sugar in the formula. We're going to make this formula even better. Going to give the kid a malted milk as opposed to a breast milk. How many of you out there were breastfed versus bottle fed? Find out. Do you know about it? There is enough statistics to prove and enough studies to prove that breastfed children have a closer bond to their mothers than bottle fed children. Of course. I mean, what do we need, rocket scientists to figure this out? But of course, if your mother is holding you and the exchange that takes place between you and your mom during breastfeeding is enormous, why do you think men are so fixated on breasts? You know what I mean?
Because they never got it when it was the right time.
Even if they did get it, they want more. But here's the thing, too.
Well, you know what? In the natural process, normally mothers would breastfeed a child 4 years, Armand. That used to be the norm. 3 to 4 years, this baby had access to the breast. And now, if it's 2 weeks, the baby's lucky.
What does it do for the mother? Right now, we talk about the bond taking place in two ways. The child's bond with the mother and the mother's bond with the child. If the mother does not breastfeed the child, I mean, breastfeeding does do something for the mother's stress levels. Having a baby suckle does do things for your chemistry.
Yes, hormones have been measured in women who were breastfeeding versus others who were feeding formula to their babies. And it has been found that women who opt for the natural way have lower levels of stress hormones, cortisol, etc., and also secrete oxytocin, the natural hormone that causes the uterus to contract, and it's also one of the hormones that is secreted during sex and orgasm, by the way. And this oxytocin facilitates the contraction of the uterus so that it comes back to normal, but not painful contraction. So the mother that opts to breastfeed has the capacity to bond with her baby and to be there for the baby much more so psychologically and physically, because her hormonal levels are such that they make her feel good.
Right, and they make her feel better and more relaxed, you know.
So
now,
for the
so
babies
at
too.
At very childbirth, there is a high potential loss of a parent.
And think about, Armand, for a baby, instinctively, for any cub, any baby, what is it like to leave mother's womb and find oneself alone with no touch, screaming, hearing other babies next to you screaming in a bassinet with lights and sounds that you're not familiar with? That's a real emergency in the brain of an infant, because the brain of an infant says, oh my God, some lion is going to come around and is going to eat me.
And that's exactly where the refugee syndrome would happen.
Right.
So then all of the chemistry of the baby goes into survival.
Right.
Because it has to survive. It is separated from its mother and there's no mother around and everything is confusing and everything sounds terrible. So they give it, or they give it a narcotic. They give it sugar.
Well, I
they
guess
give it sugar water and
calm
they tell
down,
the baby
yeah.
to calm down through
right.
this.
Right.
Little wonder that children become, babies become sugar addicts, you know, later in life.
Sure.
This is the remedy. If you're going to lose your mother, eat sugar, right? Which is little wonder that people have such a taste for sugar and alcohol later in life, especially the people who didn't feel connected to their mothers. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the bottom of this, my friends. Do you or did you not truly feel connected to your mother? You may say, I love my mom loves me, But on close examination, you may feel that you never really felt close to your mother. And we're going to show you a lot of the effects of this. And your mother never felt close to you. Now, this is the other interesting thing. Because mothers will recognize their babies, but many times if you ask them real closely, you know, they don't feel connected.
And they feel grief for that, because of that. Because every mother, I think, unless there's such serious pathology that the mother is, you know, not connected with herself, but one of the main aspects of mothering is feeling this connection with the baby and enjoying it.
Says Armand DeMille with Roberta Atti. We are here during a program called The Positive Mind. We research and discover and bring you things that may be new for your thought. I think this is a very important thing. I think this is especially important for therapists to consider. Because I think therapists, most of whom are women therapists in the world, tend to replace the missing mother. See, and that's part of their attraction. Part of their attraction. Let's look at the different ages that an infant, a child, could feel the loss of her parent. We are going to now propose to you that you could have felt a loss at birth, and that there's a certain number of syndromes that will happen to practically anybody, or a number of things, symptoms, that we could expect to happen. But let's start with the people who are get through birth, and now you lose your mother from 6 years old or younger. Now, lose your mother means mom dies, mom moves away, mom goes to work, mom puts you with a babysitter, right? Mom is depressed, right? Mom is more interested in her social life than you. Or mom turns her attention towards another baby. You be 6 years old and under, there are predictable reactions that we could see and symptoms that happen. Roberta, what happens to a child 6 years old and younger who loses his or her mother?
One of the problems is that this is a phase in which the child is not yet at the level of emotional development where he or she can put words to this experience. So the experience is registered in the body and in, let's say, in the emotions, but it's not, it can never truly be communicated to another human being because there are no words yet at that time. The way that this experience is described by people who have had it is that there is this empty space that can never be filled by anything or anyone, and that it keeps hurting, aching throughout life, and the person becomes kind of hopeless to ever be able to fill it. And often these are the people who will go to addictions, to addictive behaviors, or to compulsive behaviors to try to fill this void, always looking to fill something that they cannot even name. Plus, at this age, the child doesn't know, for instance, what death is. So if the mother dies, the child will not be able to understand that this is forever. So there's always going to be part of the of that person's mind that goes to the possibility of mother coming back, even when the intellect is developed enough to realize that that's not the case. It cannot override this early belief system, which shows up in, you know, neurosis or dreams or nightmares or compulsivity or any kind of symptom like that. The intellect can never override this magical belief that mother will come back. And then, Armand, let's look at the obesity, for instance. When children are not nurtured physically and emotionally between the ages of 0 and 6, I really believe the most significant physiological repercussion is a change in the metabolism whereby this becomes a metabolism of holding on, because the loss has been so great that this is a person who is going to try to hold on to stockpile affection, food, fat, whatever, to make sure that he or she is never caught again at that level of loss.
We're talking about the refugee syndrome. We're talking about how it affects a child when the child perceives losing its mother. We're talking about a child losing its mother before the age of 6. And, Roberta, what you're saying is you have more of a tendency to get depressed. if you lost your mother before the age of 6, and to get fat. And to put on water. I mean, water weight becomes this unusual thing where you could store huge amounts of water in your body, go on a diet for a few days, you lose 10 pounds, get off the diet, you gain it right back because your body is retaining this water and fat and sugar and everything else that comes in. It is holding back. You step on a scale after going on a diet for a week, and for some reason you lose no weight because your body is holding it back. And your body's saying, we're not going to let this go because this is what we have. This is our replacement for our lost mother.
And part of the problem is that the person keeps blaming themselves for the inability to fill that void, knowing that no matter what he or she reaches out for, can never fill it, but always being compulsively driven to look for more and more and more and more. So a kind of hopelessness sets in, and these are some of the people where they have some of the highest incidences of suicide, for instance.
Sure, you want to end your life. You can never find your mother. You can never find her.
And yet there is a part of your mind that sets in at that early age that says, perhaps if I only eat enough chocolate ice cream, I will get something like that.
Because it'll feel just like that.
Right.
Especially if you were bottle fed.
True.
You know, especially if you were bottle fed. You know, maybe if I could just get to the right bottle. It is a little wonder people turn to alcoholism, huh? Bottled sugar. You know, alcoholism in many ways, or being addicted to alcohol, is like being addicted to the
ultimate
bottles,
breast.
The ultimate bottle, the breast substitute.
Right, breast substitute. Sure.
Because it's the sugar right in the bottle.
Yeah, but if you've never had the experience of the breast or of being nurtured emotionally, alcohol can be an amazingly powerful substitute. Because I believe, Vermont, when you look at a baby breastfeeding, you look at the baby's face, what you'll see is that blissful nodding out that you see in an alcoholic or in a drug addict when they are feeling really good, when they're really stoned, drunk. They have that same expression of absolute bliss. And so, you know, that makes a great substitute, even though it's very destructive.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Antti. We're going to continue talking about this. What we're talking about, in case you just tuned in, is we're talking about the loss of your mother, which could be in any number of forms. And you as a mother could be the loss of your baby as well. You know, you as a mother very often will lose your child to your own depression. You know, to your own despair, and there's nothing you could do about it because you're stuck in this thing, so you have to deal with the loss of your child. Very often, mothers or parents who cannot be there for their children had lost mothers themselves.
Right.
You know, and it's such an obvious thing.
Well, unmothered mothers are known to be
motherless,
the least capable of responding instinctively to their offspring, which is it's an instinct, but it's not just an instinct, because you see, Armand, hormones, really, during developmental years, hormones determine to a great extent how the nervous system of this person is going to develop structurally. If you have a hormonal imbalance caused by the loss of your mother, either emotional or physical, your nervous system is going to develop very differently from the nervous system of a person who has been mothered. So later on in life, when you are now a mother, you may have less resources, inner resources, to draw from.
This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take a short break. This is If you wanted a copy of today's program, you would call 212-757-4488 in case you can't be with us. Or of the previous programs we've done on the refugee syndrome, which is very important work. It's been flying out of here. Just people are really responding. It's just about 1:30 at WBAI. We're going to take a short break, my friends. And when we be back, we'll continue with what happens to children when they lose their parents at different ages. Next is going to be what happens in 6 to 12, and then what happens at adolescence. And you may say you've never lost your mom, but most of the people we're seeing who manifest the refugee syndrome have.
Hello, we are Kinky. You're listening to WBAI. Estás escuchando WBAI. Y quédate con nosotros. Keep with us. New York City. Hola, nosotros somos Kinky de México. You're listening to WBAI. Keep with us. New York City.
Thank you.
AZDIO. Adio from the album Aria 2. ARIA, Aria 2. Back with you, The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. If you've just tuned in, because you heard some fabulous music, you're also hearing some fabulous programming. Programming about stuff that just the world of psychology, physiology, nutrition, spirituality kind of ignores. We've been talking about a thing called the refugee syndrome. We've been talking about what happens when a person perceives the loss of their mothers. Now, we're talking about it in different kind of situations. You could lose your mother to depression. You could lose your mother to her own narcissistic needs. You could lose a mother to having to go out and earn a living. You know, to a single parent having to take care of herself. You could lose your mother when you're born. You know, if they give your mother, if they induce labor, give you, take your baby away from you and don't allow you to breastfeed it, all of this are ways of losing this contact. And you see, there are some people who have that connection. There are people who are listening to this program right now saying to us, but I love my mother. I have such a connection to my mother, and they've always felt it. And there's a bottom line love between parent and child that transcends all of the judgments and stuff of age. It just goes past all of it because you're connected. When you're not connected, it almost becomes adversarial. If your mother is still alive, you're trying to get your mother to be one way or another, and you're trying to take care of her, you're trying to force her to give you something, and it's like a battle. And you don't trust her. I've asked many children, would you tell your mother that? No, I don't want to let my mother know that. I don't want to tell my mother. I don't want to worry her. I don't want her to judge me. Well, there is a bond that is possible. When you feel the bond, the most powerful bond in the universe is mother and child. When that bond is allowed to be there without interruption, you are safer in this world. Doesn't that make sense? Doesn't it make sense? Of course you're going to feel safer in the world. You're connected to somebody more than you'll ever be connected to anybody else. And if you're not, if you don't have that connection, then the rest of your life, you're trying to find it, or you give up even trying to have it. The most recent thing we were talking about is people who lose their parents at age 6 or younger. And you lose your parent either to death, a job, depression, you know, whatever pulls mom away. And some of the symptoms that the 6-year-old or younger, the younger child goes through, which includes, you know, this belief, this magical thinking that mommy's going to come back, because nobody ever tells a child, the daddy, you know, your child is dead, your mom is dead. They tell you mommy's sleeping, or they say mommy's gone away. You don't get the impact of it. What happens at the next phase? What have we studied and what have we learned about children who lose their mothers between age 6 and 12? This is also interesting. My co-host today, Roberta Atti. Roberta, what about this 6 to 12 loss?
Whereas with a child who loses connection with mother between the ages of 0 and 6, whereas that child is not even emotionally capable of grasping the concept of death or illness or depression, and so all of it goes into a preverbal traumatic state. A child after the age of 6 is already usually capable of making sense of a death or an illness, meaning the child understands what that means. So there is a chance of verbalizing, at least up to a certain point, the experience. But because the child is considered incapable of managing the emotions and the feelings connected with it, usually when this happens, the child is left out. The family isolates or protect the child from being able to participate, for instance, in the funeral.
Are we talking about 6 to 12?
Yeah,
or
6 to 12. 6 to 12.
Well, before 60, you're not allowed to be a participant
either. But even between 6 and 12, usually children are sheltered, or, you know, often they're not told mommy is very ill, or mommy's, or they're not able to go see the mother if she's very ill in the hospital, or they're not able to participate in the funeral, or they're simply not taken into account when the adults are going through whatever they're going through.
So you become, at that point, and I was speaking to a young man who was talking about this, he remembers sitting out on the cement walk while his mother was dying. And he said, you become like a piece of a chair.
Correct.
That they leave outside. Nobody cares about you. Now they're focusing on mom, and they put you aside. They're not even thinking about you and what you feel. You get tossed aside. You get pushed aside. And he spends his entire life feeling like that.
And this could be done in order to protect you from something that is believed to be too difficult for you to handle, but the reality is that at this time, the child might very well have the capacity to process this, and yet is not given a chance to very often. Another thing that...
Now, well, keep in mind, this is not just the death of a mother. This could be mom...
An illness.
Mom going through an illness, or mom being depressed, or mom going to work.
Mom leaving in some way, in a way that breaks the connection.
Sure, or mom going to Europe for 2 months.
Right.
And leaving the child behind with a babysitter.
Right. So, now what we also... have, especially for girls, well, for girls, what we have between the age of 6 and 12 is the beginning of an identification with the mother, meaning that the girl starts to compare herself, to measure herself, to use mom as a role model, and to wonder if she will become like mom, in what ways, or what should be different, etc., etc. Now, if mom is ill, or if mom has died, or if mom is away, has left, whatever, this is difficult for the girl because it becomes sort of a catch-22. If I identify with mom who is depressed in the hospital, let's say, I might end up like her. But if I do not identify with mom, then who do I identify with instead of her?
The latest symptom of that is children who feel that they're going to die at the same age as their mothers.
Which is right? Very common.
Very common, right? So if your mom dies when mom is 41, you sometimes wait till you're 41, or you predict that you're going to die by age 41.
Or you might die of the same illness.
Or you might create the same illness inside your body.
So you are so apprehensive about, let's say that mom died of cancer, you're so apprehensive about following the same fate that you might go, like what a lot of women do today, is they do preventive mastectomy, even though the breast is healthy, but mom died of this illness, and so the daughter goes through this fear, and, you know, she may resort to doing something that dramatic or that drastic, or... Truly, the body may be so apprehensive about it that it may end up developing that pathology as a result of, you know, self-hypnosis, almost.
You know, and if that is possible, Roberta, very often I imagine a person could create the very illness that their mother had as a way of connecting with their mother.
Oh, that's, yeah.
You know, in other words, I'll be just like my mom. I'm identifying with mom. I'll be right like my mom right to my death.
Mm.
You know, including now, think about it as depression. You know, mom got depressed when you were between 6 and 12 years old, and suddenly you find yourself growing on the same depressive path.
Mm.
You know, other things that happen between ages of 6 and 12 is a lot of self-blame, because you find yourself responsible.
Because also it's a time when you're identifying with your mother, but you're also trying to separate from her. And the efforts at separating sometimes may look like anger or like rejection of the mother, although this happens even more for teenagers, but it starts at this age. And so if mother really dies or really leaves or really gets sick, the child may think that it's because I pushed her away, or because I made her sick, or because I caused her suffering so much that she ended up dying from it. So there's a sense, also at this age, the child is very self-centered still, and may take on responsibility for this event. There's also another thing that might happen, transference. If the mother is not there, and the child has such a need to express these feelings towards her, but she's not available, he or she may try to forget, in a sense, that she exists, cut off all feelings, cut off all, even memories sometimes of her, and look for another human being who, onto whom these feelings and thoughts and behaviors can be placed. And this can cause a problem, especially for a young girl who might throw herself in the arms of the first person who shows a little bit of nurturing or interest. And often you find that, for instance, early promiscuity or, you know, self-destructive sexual behavior can show up in these kids as a result of an attempt to fill that void.
In other words, at age six and before, you generally feel the loss in a different kind of way and you're more likely to be depressed. Age 6 to 12, feeling the loss of mom, you're more likely to try to substitute. You get out there desperately, who's going to come along? Now, you may be a combination of both, because you may be someone who lives with a mother who's been gone your whole life, you know, which is possible, even if it's just she's not there. So here you are now desperate, and you're trying to fill it, and you're trying to find some way to get a substitute to give you this nurturance, this guidance, this identification. People who lose their mothers between age 6 and 12 very often develop a lot of heroes. And they will develop these heroes and identify with the heroes, you know. And the hero could be anything from a rock singer to a comic book character. And so they're identifying, they're saying it out there. And then somebody comes along who offers them nurturance. And it could be a man who's coming along who, you know, could be offering her the nurturance. And it looks like, you know, this is your father figure, but it's replacing the mom.
And I'm thinking, Armand, as I listen to you about the, I'm thinking about Eminem and a lot of his lyrics.
Eating them, the ones with peanuts, or no, the ones without peanuts.
The rap artist, and a lot of this music expresses hostile feelings towards mothers and women in general. Now, for boys, early loss of mother bond relationship, or mother dies, leaves, is depressed, whatever. How can you separate, Armand, which is really the task of the young boy, how can you separate from a mother that you were never able to truly bond with? So here's a lot of rage towards the mother, and yet Eminem is, what, 36, 37? He hasn't really separated from her because
he's still so angry.
He's still so angry with her, he doesn't know what to do with her, and he expresses it through this rage
towards women. Many men who have this rage towards women, which you could see, you know, you could actually see it in the form of either their sexuality or their intensity. It's that mom wasn't there. You know, mom wasn't there. They lost their moms at this age, and they're making up for it in some way. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Atti. We've got a few more minutes. Let's talk about what happens with the later age, the teenage years, Roberta. Children who feel the loss of their mothers as they go from age 12 to 17.
Mm.
Now, that's an important time.
Did you want to say something?
Right. They become... In effect, this is the time when most teenagers become their parents. Your childhood is kind of cut off. If you have a depressed mother, you start taking care of your mother. You're now, at this age, you become a parent and you lose your childhood.
Mm.
You lose the rest of your adolescence and your development. Also, you've got these hormones which are coming around. Now, what's it like to have hormones where there's no nurturance presence, you know, but there's a drive telling you connect, connect, connect. And there's everything saying there's nothing to connect to.
Well, often, for instance, for girls, what can happen is that because at this age, separation from mom becomes necessary for normal development, the rejection may become even more intense. And if the separation truly happens in a traumatic way, meaning that mom is lost through illness or death, the girl is going to grow up feeling responsible. And no amount of intellectual understanding that that's not the case is going to offset that sense that perhaps if I had been nicer to mom, if I had not rejected her, I might have I might have prevented this. Also, a girl who needs to become a woman at that time and who starts to see her body growing, you know, into the shape of a, of an adult woman, when the relationship with mother has been lost, you may find, for instance, ovarian cysts, Armand, I find very often, or disruptions in the cycle of menstruation, or either fear of sex or intense longing for romance. In other words, all of the dramatized female behavior. Let's say the girl goes to the movies and she sees a romance movie and she identifies with the woman in the movie. And now, because the relationship with mom has been damaged or lost, she tries to be like that woman in the movie, not realizing that she's trying to identify with a fantasy, with something that's not a real human being. And so she may develop a sexuality or a femininity that, while it may be very, you know, dramatic and very visibly expressive, it may lack an inner sense of what it really means to be a woman, and the sense of womanhood that supports a woman throughout life may be lacking, because too much emphasis is put on what should a woman look like rather than what should a woman feel like. And
You know, it's at this point. Now you can understand something else. A mother is gone, one form or another, depressed, withdrawn, out, or dead. The child is desperate. Her sexuality is emerging. This is the kind of field that becomes ripe for incest in one form or another. Psychological incest, physical incest with brothers and sisters, psychological incest between brothers and sisters and fathers and daughters. It happens both ways. The child is kind of yearning, almost sexually yearning, right? And the parent is responding from their own loss as well. Remember, the father has a loss as well, the brother has a loss as well. And even though it may not be a physical incest where they actually have sex, a lot of it becomes sensualized, inappropriate stuff between parent and child and brother and sister because of this loss factor at this age, 12 to 17.
Hmm. I wanted to say something about ovarian cysts.
I tell you, we may do that next week, because the one last thing I want to get to, if we would, okay. Roberta, if it's okay with you. We have just 2 minutes. Older child, middle child, younger child, only child. All different. If you're the oldest child and you lose your mother, what happens?
You become the mother substitute. You become a mini mother. You tend to now become the woman of the house, and you want to take care of your siblings, and you lose your childhood. You have to grow up overnight.
And you spend the rest of your life controlling things.
Sure.
You know, you control your husband, you control everything. Everything seems to be an issue of you being in charge.
Yes,
right?
And there's always too much demand on that child.
And now there's a second position, which you could be in, which could be the second child. Now, here's a real confusing one. Which way are you going to go?
Well, because now you may try to relate to your older sibling as if he or she were a substitute for mom, and so you try to get your parental response from that child, not realizing that they can never come from her or from him. So there's always this sense of needing something from a person who cannot give it. And so there's a sense that what I really need, I can never get.
And the rebellion that goes with it, because, you know, and I also resent it. I also resent the loss of my mother and your being in that position in the first place.
Mm.
The second child. There is also the only child.
Hmm. Well, the only child who loses mom becomes often, if she's a girl, spousified, if that's the right word, meaning that she senses the need or the loss of the father, and she tries to compensate for that loss, and she tries to mend the grief by trying to replace, emotionally at least, to replace the mother. And so there's an attachment that forms that I think you mentioned earlier that can be at least emotionally incestuous, even if neither the father nor the girl really want this. It's not something that they do on a conscious level. But Armand, I want to say, I would like to talk more about this issue because there are positive things to be said about what can be done to if you find yourself in one of these situations.
And maybe some of the advantages of having a dead mother.
Yes. Well, no. not in that way.
Listen, we have to be going. I'm sorry, Roberta. I know we are chock full of information. We will continue in our own way. We will get to doing more programming on this, but we've discovered a lot of stuff. Thank you, friends. If you wanted a copy of today's program, you would call 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And if you want to go to the website, go to thepositivemind.com. Roberta, thank you very much. I'm sorry to frustrate you. I see how much information you've got. We just don't have the time.
That's all right. Thank you for having me on the show, Armand.
Sure. Bye-bye for now.